Christophe Gollet. It's your turn. The floor is yours.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Chairman. I have no intention of repeating all the conventions and agreements that have recognized collective rights over the last 50 years, but there are some that have already been referred to by quite a few other speakers. The question here, and this has also been mentioned by some delegations, is that there are rights which are collectively violated. And if they can be violated collectively, I don't really see why they can't be protected collectively. It was done for indigenous peoples, so I don't see why it can't be done for peasants. The notion of territory, as we know, has been removed from this declaration. Perhaps it was the right thing to do, it probably was. But the fact remains that peasants' rights are being violated as indigenous people's rights are violated. And if you're going to give protection to one set of rights, which are exercised collectively, I don't see why it can't be done here as well. States have recognized this anyway. In the Convention on Biological Diversity, the same protection is offered to indigenous peoples and local communities. In the guidelines on the protection of forests and fishing, rights are recognized for peasants and other people working in rural areas, the same as they are for indigenous peoples. And these are collective rights in many cases. They've been recognized as such. Let me give you an example. In the 2012 Directive on the Governance of Fisheries and Forests, the word community appears over 70 times. In the 2014 Guidelines on Fishing, the word local communities also appear over 70 times. So these are collective rights, and they've been recognized as such for indigenous peoples and for other people working in rural areas with peasants. In response to your question, Chairman, I, like Smita, think that the only concern that's been expressed here is that collective rights might end up inadvertently leading to violations of individual rights. I'd go with what she proposed, that in Article 28 of the Declaration, we include what is in Article 8.2 of the Declaration on the Rights of Persons Belonging to Minorities. That deals with the question, and I'm pretty sure the debates that took place in those negotiations were very similar to these ones. I think what's in Article 8.2 there is an excellent response to the concerns expressed here as well. As to putting rights exercised collectively and individually, or collectively or individually, as other delegations have indicated, having lost the reference to individual and collective rights in the Declaration is harmful because it means it doesn't apply to all the articles in the Declaration. What remains then is this notion of collective and individual in 8 articles of the Declaration. I don't intend to list them all because you probably know what they are better than I do. Basically, I think this is the minimum we can do. There are plenty of other examples, plenty of other articles where it would have been perfectly reasonable to put individual or collective. I don't know why we didn't put it in freedom of movement, access to information, access to justice, the right to work, the right to the environment, the right to seeds. Collective rights could be referred to in those other articles as well without any particular problem, but they haven't, at least not explicitly. So I think what we're doing now with them, individual and collective, is the very minimum we can do. The same is true of communities. The reference to communities appears in Article 1, the definition, and then it appears in 9 other articles of the Declaration as well. This reference to rights that can be exercised individually in association with others or collectively could apply to all the articles in the Declaration. After 6 years of negotiation, we're down to the minimum, and I don't think we can go below that minimum